I'm Lee from Just One More Fix, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network. Just like the show you're listening to now, the opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
I am the Green Arrow.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other award-winning reporters for this episode number 202 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
How about you just drop me off on an island full of beautiful women, like Zari did with that Helen chick?
It sounds like a good plan to me. And Michelle.
I swear to you, if I die today because of a telepathic gorilla, I'm going to be very upset.
I believe her. I really do. Okay. So this podcast is recorded on Sunday, July 1st, 2018, live via www.geeks.live.
That's right, and this evening we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could, and very well will, impact future episodes of Legends, as well as the rest of this universe, which means The Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, Vixen, Constantine, and all of those things are fair game.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. Michelle, let's go ahead and break down the current episode.
Sure thing. This is episode 7 of season 3 called Welcome to the Jungle. It originally aired Tuesday, November 21st, 2017, directed by Marzi Almas. Credits include 1 Iron Fist, 5 of the 100, 1 Supergirl, 3 Arrow, and 3 Legends. Written by Ray Utrnarchet. Credits include 1 Supergirl, 10 Legends, 1 Flash, and 4 Tomorrow People. And Tyrone Carter, who is a former writer's assistant and has written 2 Legends.
All great experienced people, and glad to have them on this episode. By the way, this episode aired way back in November 2017. We're going to go over some of the live plus 7 DVR ratings for that week for the CW shows. So on Monday, the 20th of November, Supergirl aired the 7th episode of the 3rd season titled Wake Up to a total viewership of 3.17 once the week was all said and done. On Tuesday, the 21st of November, Flash with its 7th episode of the 4th season aired the episode Therefore I Am with a total viewership over the week of 4.28. That's in million, by the way. And then following The Flash on Tuesday, the 21st of November, Legends of Tomorrow aired this episode, Welcome to the Jungle, to a total rating over the week of 2.57. And on Thursday, our favorite TV show, Arrow, with its 7th episode of the 6th season, aired Thanksgiving to a total rating of 2.16, the lowest of the 4 for the week. And once again, I need to point out that is the live plus 7 DVR ratings for all 4 shows. So now that we've gotten all that underneath our belt, Michelle, what is the main theme of the episode?
Well, this episode is not about going back in time and telling Axel Rose to not be such an egomaniac. No, instead, the team ends up in 1967 Vietnam in the jungle during the war.
So is it just me or does anyone else feel like they missed the opportunity to play Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle? I was waiting for the entire episode.
I'm guessing by the title that they might have tried to reach out to get the rights to broadcast it, and they probably just couldn't afford it.
I wager it was probably a matter of cost. But man, with a title like that, you're probably just sitting there, at least I was, going, come on, is this going to be the moment? Oh, no. Damn.
Well, at least they didn't do the Apocalypse Now music.
Okay, good point.
I was afraid they were going to do that.
Yeah, either that or Platoon. I don't think Platoon was referenced. Apocalypse Now was referenced.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. Nate did that. What's interesting about this episode, yes, our team ends up there because of Gorilla Grodd and everything, But we end up meeting Mick Roy's dad, Dick Roy, who was portrayed by Evan Jones. This was terrific casting, because I believed at the moment he showed up that that man definitely could be Mick's dad.
Oh, yeah. They played off each other and had each other's mannerisms down so well.
It was a great pairing, and I totally believed he was his dad. Now, remember, I think they're around the same age. Mick might actually be older right now, but still deferring to his pop every once in a while.
Guys, they even hawk loogies the same way. It's fantastic.
So, Chris, Mick Roy is one of your favorite characters. What are some things that we learn from their interaction?
Well, we learn from their interaction and the story as it unfolds that Mick killed his dad. He doesn't feel bad about it at the beginning, and then he might feel bad about it at the end because he kind of begins to understand where his dad came from and the fact that, you know, the war could potentially screw you up a little bit when it's all said and done. I mean, at one point in the show, you start to believe, oh, he's back under daddy's spell. He loves his dad. He wants to be side by side with him, or he's just swept up in the mania of combat. One of the two. But you kind of get an understanding of why Dick Roy might have been not a great father and why Mick doesn't particularly care for him. Now, does that justify Mick killing him? Probably not.
Mick didn't just kill his dad. He killed his whole family, right? His mom and dad.
True.
Yeah. So he's definitely messed up, but we're getting the reformed Mick right now, even though he claims to be the, I don't know, wild card out of the bunch. I mean, he's the criminal still, the thief, I believe he calls himself.
This is the Mick that's lived many years as Kronos also, and been under Time Lord brainwashing and stuff like that. Time Master, excuse me, crossing the genres there. But so he's not quite the same Mick that we saw at the beginning of this show, which probably helps him a little bit when it comes to having to interact with his father.
So Chris, I got a question for you. In the context of the Arrowverse, Mick Rory versus Wade Wilson. Go.
Well, Wade's unkillable, so Wade would win that fight.
Okay.
If we're having a fight.
Are you sure he's unkillable? I mean, the Mirakuru is worn off.
You mean Slade Wilson?
Yes.
You said Wade Wilson, so I was very confused.
I did say Wade Wilson. I meant Slade.
I was very confused. I was like, okay, we're going to talk about Deadpool?
Sure, let's talk about Deadpool. No, no, no. In the context of the Arrowverse, who would win, Slade Wilson or Mick Rory?
Slade.
Really?
Yeah, Slade. He's got actual planning to what he does. Go and watch the standalone episodes with Slade this season, Arrow, where he basically takes out a compound of mercenaries all by himself. Slade's a trained military guy. Mick is a criminal who's had some training to be a bounty hunter, but Slade's like a one-man army.
And if you noticed, when Dad and Mick came in, they were all fire. They both loved using fire to attack enemies and such.
Family trait.
Yeah, it's a family trait. Mick's thing is fire, burn. Well, Slade can do fire, burn, sword, whatever.
Slade's thing is, I'm going to kill you. That's what his thing is.
And I have multiple ways to do it.
Yes, I can do it with my fists. I can do it with my guns. I can do it with my swords. I can do it with bombs. I don't care as long as you end up dead.
So, SP, what did you think of Mick and his dad's relationship?
That was interesting. It was definitely preconceived in Mick where he was going to go. And I don't know how much of it was himself as an adolescent and how much of it was truly Mick's character that made him torch the whole house. I could tell the dad was deeply affected by the Vietnam War, as most Vietnam vets are. Matter of fact, we're seeing that now with the global war on terrorism, with everybody since the mid-90s on having to deal with that in the current armed services. Everybody that's participated, Canada, United States, whatever. And I think that the guy that Mick was seeing was the different than the dad that he had projected in his mind and he had experienced growing up. I thought the relationship was one of almost respect between the two at the end of the day. And that was, I think, special. I did like that one shot where they both were using their flamethrowers, you know, Mick's using his heat gun and dad's using the actual flamethrower, and they're sweeping the same way and everything. So they're just one in the same. A chip off the old block, you know.
He does eventually stand up to his father and prevents him from killing all those people. Because what's happened, Gorilla Grodd has landed in Vietnam, and Gorilla Grodd is a telepath, and he has taken over this little city section of the jungle and has influenced the locals and the troops to stop fighting. And Dick Roy sees all of them as traitors, and he doesn't really like traitors. So eventually when they invade Grodd's compound, he lines everybody up and he's ready to kill them. And then Mick stops him and says, if you do this, you will hear their screams for the rest of your life.
Yeah, a voice of experience.
Exactly.
I'm sure that's part of what haunts Mick. He probably hears the voices of his family that he barbecued.
Probably.
Or all the people he killed as Kronos.
Yeah, he said he didn't regret it, but I can only imagine that it was in his mind, as you said. He probably replays it over and over and over again. So, really weird situation here.
So, SP, what'd you think of Gorilla Grodd as the big bad of the episode, basically?
Well, I think they were trying to play off a bit of Predator more than anything else in here. I mean, they even labeled Mick as Schwarzenegger at one point, right? Nate labeled Mick as Schwarzenegger during the episode at one point. And that just gave off a Predator vibe. And Predator, for those that don't know, it's set in the Vietnam era in a jungle situation. And you have this monster that has a cloaking device and is just bred to basically go out and kill people and commit war, acts of war, that sort of stuff. An alien. But that's what the Predator is supposed to be doing. And Gorilla Grodd came off that way because you really didn't see him in the initial scene when you just had people that were being thrown around that were in the jungle. You add in Gorilla Grodd's mind control abilities, and he's able to, and it's really weird, he's able to bring together both sides to basically all fight for his cause versus their causes that they're having. You know, in the end, he's not entirely wrong. The way he might be going about it is bad, but he sees humanity as just wanting to kill itself, which this was one of the heights of the Cold War. So he's got a point, but again, the way he goes about things is probably not for the best.
What about you, Chris?
I enjoyed having Grodd here, but it's kind of underwhelming after considering the last time we saw Gorilla Grodd. It was like the assault on Gorilla City. He's leading an army of gorillas, and him being in the shadows pulling the strings, A, was interesting, but B, also a good way to save money on having him appear too, because they probably spend good money on the special effects, because every time he shows up, he looks really good on screen, and this was not any different this week. The Gorilla Grodd CGI was pretty good. Now, you didn't get a ton of it.
That is true. And Grodd eventually finds out they're time travelers, and he's just like, you know what? How about if I just time travel back to before humanity? I'll just shape evolution, and no one will be around. And that's how it becomes a level 10 event.
Yeah, that's bad news, guys. Level 10, that's the bad stuff.
Heck, I thought it was bad at 8.
Yeah, it gets worse.
An interesting interaction happened between Amaya and Grodd. At the beginning of the episode, Amaya is dealing with that Kawasa, the water witch, as they've dubbed her, is a bad guy. And she's very determined. At the beginning, even if she's my granddaughter, I'm going to take her out. That's it. But she has this interaction with Grodd, and she realizes that at the end, it's because with Grodd, he was experimented on with by humans and made into this, you know, not by choice. And she learns that perhaps Kawasa is a product of her environment and not exactly her, that she's not evil by nature.
That's true. It's part of her ongoing flip-flopping and feelings for Kawasa that we've seen this season, where at first she empathized with her, then it's, she's evil, she's a water witch, agrees with Nate at first, so it's kind of this cyclical nature in her thoughts on Kawasa, and I think it makes sense that seeing how Grodd was treated might make her feel like that, but they're not one and the same, their experiences. It just kind of provides some illumination, I guess.
SP?
I think that the whole Kawasa thing is kind of special at this point in time in the season, because you really come to the point where they have to figure out how to deal with her. And she is family, you know, to Amaya. And first of all, it's very hard to try to kill her anyway, because she's can degrade into water. But
yes, that's difficult. I guess you could boil her.
Well, then she just becomes steam, right?
Good point.
Until she condensed back down to water. So there's that aspect of it, but there's the other aspect that Amaya doesn't want to kill her. I mean, nobody really does. So they're just trying to figure out how to deal with her without getting killed themselves. Cause she could, like she was trying to do with Ray, just go into their lungs and fill them up and drown them. I have somewhat of a sympathetic ear to Kawasa at this point, but again, it's the, do the ends justify the means? I don't agree with her methods, just like I didn't agree with Gorilla Grodd's methods. So she needs to be stopped at all costs.
Another storyline in the episode was Firestorm. Because Stein is a grandpa, he does want to stop being a time traveling hero, but there is that problem of separating Firestorm, you know, between him and Jack. And SP, what did you think of Stein consulting all those different scientists?
Well, it seems to be a theme throughout the seasons on the Arrowverse, because over in The Flash, you had the Council of the Wells, you had that going on too. So it's a similar sort of thing. It was just in this particular case, they were going into time and reaching out into time versus the duplicative universes. I think it was great. I think Stein sells himself short a little bit, but scientists do work better when they get peer reviewed from time to time. So, I mean, that's just reality of things. So you'd kind of expect something like this happening at some point in time. The interesting note about going into history to pick out scientific minds is science is cumulative and it builds upon previous discovery. And if you're missing 200, 300, 400 years of discovery, you might not have as great of a foundation to give that advice to, but it was just fun having him around.
What did you think of his selections of Newton, Galileo, and Curie?
It felt very much to me an homage to what Data did in, what was it, the episode Descent, I think it was, where he played poker with Stephen Hawking and, who all was it now? Now I'm brain farting.
You know, that's a good point. They might have wanted Stephen Hawking on board, but they just couldn't get him because of health reasons. That could have been. I know that Stephen Hawking appeared this past year on The Big Bang Theory, but that was just, you know, almost stock shots of him sitting in the wheelchair. But Stephen Hawking was always great to see on TV. And as far as his selections, I mean, you're talking Newton for gravity, you're talking Galileo for telescopes. I mean, they do have foundational astrophysics, but I don't necessarily know if they have anything to do with either time dilation or the firestorm, the nuclear part of it. I would imagine that you'd want somebody that was more akin to nuclear science than anything else, but that's just me.
More like Einstein?
Einstein, Oppenheimer, yeah.
Well, I like the fact that Marie Curie likes pie, and that's why Jax's slice of his mom's pecan pie was gone. That was funny.
It was a good moment.
And they continued the pie joke with Lyndon Johnson's wife.
That must be some good pie, though. I mean, I kind of want some pecan pie now, and I am going to the grocery store after dinner tonight, so maybe I'll be getting some of that.
Hey, look up the recipe to the Johnson pecan pie and see if that ladybird is available.
I'm going to Google that right now.
See if you can buy the ingredients for that. Yeah, there you go. We have solved Chris's midnight refrigerator run crunch right here.
Well, there is epicurious.com has Ladybird Johnson pecan pie recipe as the first result when I search it. Now, is it true? Probably not, but it's on the internet, so there's a chance it could be.
And we do have the moment where Jax tells Stein, I have to go out and help, finds out that the president is going to be killed. He has to go, you know, save the president. He's very determined to do this on his own because he's like, I have to learn how to be by myself, which is kind of sad considering what happens next. Isn't it, Chris?
A little bit.
Yeah. So you've got just a couple episodes left, really, right? You've got something that big that's going to happen coming up soon. And I don't know if this was kind of filler or not, but they needed to try to move ahead with them being solo individuals. And, you know, this was a way to do it. But, and he was very heroic. Jax was very heroic about what went on. I mean, not many people would literally walk a minefield with anybody, even if it is the president. So I think it was a good step forward, but it just reminds you that this is coming to an end one way or the other.
And it hurts.
And at the end of the episode, Grodd is falling into napalm, but he's rescued by Damian Dark for nefarious plans, I imagine.
Insert evil villain laugh here. If anyone wants to do it, feel free. I'm not doing it. Thank you, SP. That just made my day.
I loved how Damian was just like, you know, I'm a really big fan of your work. That missile, that was excellent. See one bad guy complimenting another bad guy.
Yeah, I'd be worried. I was thinking about this when he was talking to Grodd. I'd be worried about Grodd taking over my mind or just out killing me because of his brute force or something like that. But no, Damian is just sitting there going, ah, big fan. Wait, yeah, we need to get together and have a few drinks at the bar and discuss how to take over the universe together.
I wonder if magic helps protect his mind from that or something like that. I don't know if it does.
He probably created a magical force field, mind force field around himself in order to even have that conversation. You're right.
So basically his own sort of Magneto's hat.
Yeah, he just needed the Magneto hat over his... Yeah, that's right. That's all he needed. Chalk went up for Michelle.
He just sort of like made his own. You just can't see it, but it's there.
Invisible helmet.
Exactly.
I like it.
SP, is there anything else you want to talk about with this episode?
Well, we haven't talked about Sarah, and there's not much to talk about. She was in a coma for most of the episode, and usually we rate the captain, and usually that's Sarah. I don't think we can in this episode. So is there anybody that we can choose in Sarah's stead to rate as captain, or is this truly the team acting on their own the entire episode?
Amaya has plans. She is like, you guys will go into the jungle and we will pose as journalists. And it is Ray's idea to actually start working, but it seems as though Amaya takes command in the field. She does have that experience. I mean, overall, the team did pretty good. Even though it did go from an 8 to a 10, they did basically fix things.
Yeah, how different is that from any other week? It always goes from a 7 to a 10 or 8 to a 10 or a 2 to a 10. Always happens.
They screw things up before they fix it. They said something affected that at the beginning of the episode.
What about you, Chris? Anything else you want to talk about?
I can't think of anything. I just enjoyed getting a bunch of Mick. A Mick-centric episode is a rare thing, so enjoy it. And then he goes back to just killing it as the comedic relief.
I have to admit, I sort of like the... When Sarah says there, you know, there is no Sarah, there is only Grodd. And I'm just like, there is only Zool.
I know. I caught that too.
And of course, Gideon gets the whole, I'm actually flying the ship, Martin. You're not really doing anything moment.
He was so proud of himself to actually sit in the chair. So if you're watching these episodes for the first time and you're listening to this podcast as you're watching it, you have to have noted the last 7 episodes. Martin Stein got to do some phenomenal things. The writers had him do everything. He sang a few times. He got to fly the ship. I mean, he's done a lot the last 7 episodes. And I really respect what they're trying to do with his character.
Agreed. Because next time we're going to discuss Crisis on Earth X Part 4, Season 3, Episode 8. If you haven't seen this yet, get some tissues.
Oh, yeah, you're going to need them.
It originally aired Tuesday, November 28, 2017. The gang comes together for Barry and Iris' wedding, but the ceremony is crashed by villains from Earth-X. It's directed by Gregory Smith. Mark Guggenheim and Andrew Kreisberg did the story. Phil Klemmer and Kito Shimizu did the teleplay for Part 4.
Looking forward to that. Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of the Starling Tribune Tower, it's the weekly news roundup with Chief News Anchor, award-winning Michelle Ealy. And now, Michelle Ealy.
Thanks, SP. We have a couple of Arrow news. First, we have the season 7 synopsis, since teasing a major new villain. According to Warner Brothers Television description for the Arrow Comic-Con International in San Diego panel, there has been no shortage of close calls for Oliver Queen when it comes to protecting his superhero identity, but in the season 6 finale, he was backed into a corner and forced to reveal to the world as the Green Arrow. Now, Oliver will come face to face with many of the criminals he placed behind bars, as he makes a new home for himself at Slab Side Maximum Security Prison. Oliver will find himself vulnerable in a way unlike ever before when a mysterious new enemy begins to unravel his work as Green Arrow, challenging him to redeem his name or risk losing everything. And Arrow returns to the CW on Monday, October 15th at 8 p.m. So guys, what do we think of this?
This challenging new villain who is before unknown.
Boy, this sounds familiar.
Yeah. Sounds like every single season almost of
ding, ding, ding.
Arrow, yeah.
Maybe I'm cynical.
No, Chris, you cynical? No. But you also love Arrow. You love the universe. You love what is possible here. So it's not like you're totally Debbie Downing everything.
I'm just hoping, like I said before, that they don't make the prison arc be like 2 episodes long and then it's done.
Well, you know it's only going to be 6-7 episodes long.
That's okay if that's the case.
Yeah, there's going to be another crossover.
I just feel like we've gotten burned in the past by some stuff. Like Flashpoint was an episode long. Flashpoint, if you've read the comics or watched the animated movie, there was so much potential for the kind of stuff they could have done there. And it was a one and done kind of thing. And I just don't want to see the same thing happen here, because we talked about before doing a Green Arrow Supermax prison kind of movie has been floated around before. And I don't want to see them squander the opportunity to do something great by being like, oh, we're done. He's out of jail now.
Damn it, Barry. He ruins everything. He even ruins the thing that he was supposed to ruin everything about, Flashpoint. I mean, he can't get anything right.
It's true.
I have to admit, I hope it's just not another villain that was wronged by Oliver when he was the Green Arrow. I hope it is somebody outside of Oliver's past.
Agreed.
It's interesting. So think about the comic villains of Arrow. And think about who it could be. Think about who we are getting for the crossover. And it kind of opens up the aperture a little bit, too. But, Chris, do you have any ideas on who this could be?
I don't right now. But part of me almost hopes they don't even use an Arrow villain. They take something from maybe Flash or something like that. Nothing says it has to be someone from the Arrow world. It could be someone who just wants to make a name for themselves by taking out Oliver Queen in jail. I don't know. Deadshot would be cool, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Wouldn't it be great if Mark Hamill crossed over?
Yeah, I don't think that one's going to happen, but that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's just the fact that we're getting Batwoman does open up everything, I think. It opens up to the entire DC Universe villains. I would think it would be something that a street thug hero could counter. You know, not anything too powerful, not anything you need a Superman for, but he's still, we'll have to all think about it and speculate for the rest of the summer.
Yeah, that'll work.
Well, more season 7 news for Arrow. The showrunner has revealed the title for the first episode. So dark days are undoubtedly ahead for the character who is now stuck in prison. And it's only about to get worse. The new showrunner of Arrow revealed that the title of season 7 premiere is Inmate 4587, hinting that life behind bars will certainly not be easy for Oliver Queen. Oliver's inmate number, 4587, is an Easter egg in and of itself, considering that it was the agent number of Vinny Terranova, the main character of the classic television series Wise Guy. But on top of that, this also isn't the first time these numbers have appeared in the Arrowverse. Most notably, it was the number of the warehouse in the Legends of Tomorrow episode Star City 2046, an episode that presented viewers with a very dark future for Green Arrow.
Hmm.
So a couple things here. First of all, the new showrunner for Arrow is, of course, Beth Schwartz, in case you didn't know that. And second of all, dang it. Arrowverse. Now I got to change the PIN code on my credit card.
Ha ha ha, you're screwed.
Duh.
Or maybe, yeah, that would be funny how many people are like, oh man, that's my PIN. How dare you, Beth Schwartz? Oh, that's funny. Well, now we're going to move into some general DC news. And Chris, you have some Legends of Tomorrow news.
That's right. So Comic-Con's coming up soon. So everyone had to get their descriptions in so they could get them into the Comic-Con panel descriptions and the programs and stuff. So we found out a little bit more about Legends this season straight out of the Comic-Con panels. For Legends, they say, after defeating Malice by cuddling to death with a giant stuffed animal named Bebo, the Legends were ready to ease off the gas. That was until Constantine arrived to inform them that in solving one major problem, they have created another, much larger one. When the Legends let time crumble in order to release and defeat Malice, the barrier between worlds softened. History is now infected with fugitives, magical creatures from myths, fairy tales, and legends. Having been expelled throughout time by people like Constantine, these fugitives are now returning to our world in droves and making a real mess of things. So when all hell breaks loose, who are you going to call? That's right, the Legends. This sounds like fun, guys. This just sounds like more fun and ridiculousness, and I'm totally on board.
As long as they treat it like fun, then I think it could be fun. But if they treat it like Once Upon a Time, it's not going to work.
It's not like Disney fairy tale stuff. It's myths, fairy tales, and legends. Like dragons and stuff. It's not going to be Snow White.
I get that. I was just saying, I hope they treat it properly. And I hope they don't treat it like Once Upon a Time.
Like this season, how they treated the anachronisms, kind of hoping that they treat the fugitives like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think if you just replace the word anachronism with fugitive, it's probably what it's going to be, with just some like think lock and key, Joe Hillish kind of weird supernatural stuff involved in it.
Yep. That's what I'm thinking, just because that seems to work for the show. So keep it up and, you know, same stuff, just different villain set. I think it would work.
And Chris, you have news about a character coming back for season 4 of Legends, correct?
That's right. Surprising, because we thought the character was done, but Maisie Richardson Sellers is returning as Amaya Jiwe. Vixen, executive producer Mark Guggenheim noted that she would return, saying, yes, Maisie will absolutely be back. We just felt like we owed it to the character to complete this arc, complete the story loop we got her in. Once we took her off her path in 1942, it was always incumbent upon us to return her to that path. This is something that's hung over us as writers and hung over the character. I'm looking forward to a different storyline for Amaya next year, which confuses me because I thought they did finish her story.
Same here.
Yeah.
That's how you get your relationship drama we have to have in a CW show.
If this is true, Nate and Amaya would be the only couple on the Wave Rider, right? So, yeah.
Well, I mean, Constantine's probably going to sleep his way through the ship if he has his way.
Oh, yeah. Constantine and Sarah. Well, yeah, Constantine and everybody. You're right.
Constantine sleeps with anyone. I mean, that's his MO.
Ava is going to be a permanent, you know, season character.
True, but they've hinted that something's up with Ava for next year.
Yeah, that's true. There's an upcoming episode that sort of explains that. But Constantine, let's just say monogamy is not in his vocabulary.
No, it is not one of the words he regularly uses.
But to complete my thought here, I was thinking that Nate and Amaya were the only couple that were going to be living on the ship. And even if Ava is part of the show and still in a relationship with Sarah, she's not on the ship. She's like a visitor, a guest to the ship. So the Nate Amaya angle gives you that relationship that's built into the ship on a week-to-week basis. Must be, when are they air? Is it going to be Tuesdays again next year? I forget.
I do too.
Yes, it's supposed to be Tuesdays.
So it must be Tuesday. There's something going on in the Wave Rider.
It's just something in the water, man.
Well, back in March, I covered that the Saturn Award nominees were announced. And, well, the awards happened. And, well, we really didn't do all that great. Our CW shows were nominated for Best Superhero Television Series. Okay, so Best Superhero Adaptation ended up being The Flash. We didn't win Best Actress. That went to Sonequa Martin-Green for Star Trek Discovery. And we did not win for Best Supporting Actress, which went to Rhea Seehorn for Better Call Saul.
What?
Which is the spinoff to Breaking Bad. Are there like aliens or something in Better Call Saul? Like,
not that I know of.
I mean, I know the Saturn Awards does a lot of stuff with different genres and such, but I thought that was kind of weird.
It sounds weird to me too. I'm just looking it up right now to double check here. And best comic to motion picture release was Black Panther.
Well, that's the movies.
Right. Now I got to go down to TV. I'm still in film. Here we go. TV. So best superhero television series was The Flash. Best sci-fi TV series was The Orville. Wow, The Orville over The Expanse. Best fantasy TV series is Outlander or Walking Dead. Yeah. Best action or thriller TV series is Better Call Saul.
So they got all lumped in that actor category, and that's how Better Call Saul won, because it's the action category.
It must be, yeah.
Yeah, that's odd. Oh, well, that's how they run it. But anyway, well, congratulations to all the winners. I'm not here to, like, complain about the winners. I just wanted to follow up with the story that I presented in March. I did say that I would report on how our shows and actors did, but we got The Flash. The Flash won. Yay.
Damn it, Barry.
I kind of wish it was Legends, but hey, at least it was one of our shows. And Chris, you have news about the DC Universe streaming service.
Right. So in today's world, everyone feels like they need to have a streaming service. So DC is quite the same. The Warner Brothers Digital Networks has announced the full details of DC Universe. That's their digital subscription service, which will give members access to not only new live-action animated series such as Titans and Young Justice Outsiders, but also classic movies and TV shows, a curated selection of digital comics, and exclusive merchandise. Well, beta access will open in August ahead of the platform's planned launch this fall. DC Universe will launch with the live-action Titans, followed in 2019 by Young Justice Outsiders, which if you haven't watched the first two seasons of that cartoon, do it, it's fantastic, and Harley Quinn, an animated series. They'll be joined next year by live-action Swamp Thing and Doom Patrol, classic DC movies and television shows, including the original Superman films, the first two seasons of Batman, the animated series, and the original Wonder Woman will also be available at launch. In addition to that, the curated library of DC Comics will span decades of releases from Action Comics number 1 to recent stories. They'll be presented on a rotating selection, which can be downloaded for reading on mobile devices. Now, I have no idea what this costs, but part of me wants to get the service just to watch Young Justice Season 3.
Yeah, I guess if you're already invested in something like that, this would be a good thing. I am actively resisting going to these one-off streaming services just because I know if I do them all, I'm going to end up in extreme debt. So
my hope is they do like the one-week trial and I can just binge watch everything I want to in that one-week trial and call it a day.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's the dream. That's the dream. We'll see if it happens.
Yeah, CBS All Access was like 1 month free. I'm like, excellent. Now I get to binge Star Trek Discovery and then cancel it because I do not have enough money to do Netflix and Hulu and technically Amazon Prime, because that's also video. So you can actually take some of that money and add into this. Then there's the Disney one that's coming up, the DC one that's coming up. Who else?
Everyone's going to have one at this point in time. That's the problem. We've gone from having fragmented cable packages to fragmented streaming services.
Well, we've gone from having cable packages that were all-inclusive to the point where it was more than you wanted to spend to fragmented packages, which you're going to end up spending more than you were before because of all the fragments, and then all the other in the combined package, all the other networks like ESPN. ESPN is very expensive for your cable package.
I mean, I guess the trade-off you have in all of this stuff now is you could be like, well, I want to try DC this month, so I know I won't be watching Hulu. Let me turn that off for a month. And you could try and balance your subscriptions that way, I guess, but still, that's a pain in the butt.
That's another thing I don't have. I don't have Hulu, but I have cable with a lot of on-demand stuff, so it's almost like a streaming service in of itself that replaces Hulu, but not entirely, because there are Hulu exclusives.
They're pretty good, some of them. But Hulu has its own problems, like the fact I don't get 5.1 surround sound on a Roku. That's dumb.
I'm just glad to see this stuff, regardless of what kind of sound comes through. But I guess if I had a sound system like yours, I'd be picky too. So I want to throw this out to our listeners. Listeners, if you are looking at joining a digital streaming service or a digital network like Warner Brothers is purporting here, let us know, and also let us know what other streaming services that you are included on, because I think that would be a good comparison to say, okay, I'm going to get this, but I don't have anything else, or I'm going to get this and I already have Netflix, I have Amazon Prime, I have Hulu, I have the CBS All Access, I have all this stuff, and I just get this, and I have cut the cord, so I have no ability to get TV any other way. So I'd be interested to learn that. So listener, go ahead and hit us up. You can hit me up, StargatePioneer@GunnyGeek.com for an email address, or you can hit us up on Twitter at Starling Tribune.
Well, that's the news for this week. Now, Chris, we are part of a big network of podcasts, aren't we?
That's right, Michelle. We're part of the Gunna Geek Network, which has 25 plus shows on it, and we cover a variety of topics. You know us, Starling Tribune, we talk about Arrow, we talk about Legends of Tomorrow. There's other shows that talk about board games and video games, general geek culture, all sorts of things. And we can't easily highlight every show, but we can give you a taste of one show. And this week, we're going to talk about episode 318 of the All Things Good and Nerdy podcast, entitled Willie Came In Like a Wrecking Ball, because we talked about Overwatch. But this week, Willie explains why the newest Overwatch character is basically Miley Cyrus, while Anthony geeks out over the upcoming Spider-Geddon event, and Chris has the latest details on the upcoming Titans series. Note, we talked about that on this show today. As things wrap up, the crew touches on some of the latest news regarding console crossplay and how some fandoms are becoming more and more sick. Yeah, there's a fandom problem out there, guys, and we touched on it a little bit, but check out All Things Good and Nerdy. Check out any of the other awesome shows in the Gunna Geek Network by heading on over to GunnaGeek.com and clicking on the network button. But looking at the time, it is time for us to start wrapping things up. So a giant thank you to everyone who did watch the live stream today over on Geeks.live, but also a thank you to anyone who's downloaded the replays available in audio version over installingtribune.com or the video version on youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
If you happen to have an Amazon device, you can enable our podcast as a skill. All you have to say is a word, enable Starling Tribune, and it will go ahead and give you full player capability across all of our shows. And you don't have to go through a third-party app like TuneIn. And also remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Sundays.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we go? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag just like dad.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag invisible helmet. Oops.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag I like pie. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.